Is it me, or has Electro been on a roll lately? I mean, say what you will about him being a, quote, second-tier villain. That guy is playing lights out. This is Inside the Look. Welcome inside the locker. Step into our gym adjacent TARDIS. It's bigger on the inside. This is One of Us Net's weekly geeky sportscast made for both diehard fans and those who don't know a football from a griff ball. This is Brian Salisbury, killing it like Scotty Smalls. And I'm here with the three best guys to have on your own sandlot. JC the Jet DeLeon.
I couldn't come up with anything funny to say just now.
Adam Squints Charles.
I get to be... Is it because I'm wearing glasses?
No, it's because you married Wendy Peppercorn.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, see, yeah. All right. And Elliot, Fontanette.
Hey, I got to get back to my uniform fitting with the Racine peaches.
First of all, it's Racine.
Yeah, it was like Racine.
I thought it was Racine.
No, Racine sounds like what happens when those peaches go bad.
Ah, damn it.
They're now Racine peaches. But yes, anyway, we get the idea. How is everybody doing today, guys?
Good.
We're doing better than a certain NBA owner in Los Angeles.
Yes, indeed.
He's not having a sterling day.
He is not, and we will be talking about that momentarily. But first, I want to remind you that Inside the Locker, just like all of our content on One of Us, is available on iTunes. Just search for One of Us in the podcast section. You can also find us on Stitcher, which, again, is a thing that really exists, and Twitter, at ITLcast. You can find the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet, and please do consider becoming a subscriber to oneofus.net. Again, I can only tell you that you will be happy that you did, probably this time next week. Anywho, we're going to answer some listener questions and actually bring in a special guest to discuss the NBA playoff picture as it stands in just a moment, but first, hold the goddamn phone. It's sports news.
Flash, the captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at SeaQuest. These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press.
And I don't feel like we could really start off this show without... I mean, this has to be the first thing we talk about. Donald Sterling, the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, let me introduce you to my friend, the Banhammer. That guy went full Kramer and is now paying the piper. JC, break it down for us. What was the ruling by NBA commish Adam Silver?
So in his first major decision, not more than 3 months into the job, Adam Silver has declared, based on the allegations that came up of a tape recording, Donald Sterling is now banned for life. Lifetime ban is not allowed in the Clippers facility, not allowed in games, not allowed in practices. Importantly to some, not allowed at the NBA governor's meetings, which, you know, decide a lot of how the league is run. Basically, he's persona non grata for anything and everything NBA related.
Yeah, and it's funny because the only other person I could think of who has been given this sort of ban is Pete Rose. Mm-hmm. And what's ironic about that is that Donald Sterling calls every black valet Johnny Hustle. So, it's a weird coincidence. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I'm going to let this guy have it because he's a racist asshole. And, you know, these tapes came out, these recordings made by his mistress who his wife knows about. Like, it's a weird fucked up situation in this guy's life.
It's called money.
Well, yeah, no, I it's definitely called money. It's something that that's why it's weird to me, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, he says all these things about not liking the fact that his mistress has got pictures of her with black guys on her Instagram. I should emphasize this. These are things he's saying to his mixed race mistress.
Yep.
I don't like it that you associate with black guys on Instagram and saying, and she's like, well, you have all the, do you not like the black players? I mean, she's clearly, like Elliot said,
she's leading him.
She's leading him big time.
And the thing is, the guy is a lawyer. You never stop being a lawyer. He used to be a lawyer. He's a businessman.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're having an argument with your significant other or not. You need to know, at least for that argument's sake, if you're being led.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that she's trying. She's like, So, do you just not like a certain color of people?
Tell me why.
Or is there just like let's make it a black and white issue. Is there one side of that equation you don't like? Like, I mean, she could not be any more clear. And then she says something like, well, do you not like the players on your, the black players on your team? And he's like, I give them money. I give them food. I give them cars. Yeah. I'm like, no, you just give them money. Like, just stop at money. And frankly, that just makes you sound like a bigger douche. So
like a it's like he views himself as a benevolent plantation owner.
Well, I give them money.
I give them the nicest put the cut of pork I can find.
They use it to buy all 40 of their acres.
And their ounces.
And their Cadillac mules. Like, just like, fuck you, dude. Seriously. And not only that, but he has been hit with a $2.5 million fine, which is the highest that they are allowed to fine someone in the NBA. And Adam Silver is rallying the league governors to buy the team away from Silver and effectively make him no part of the – I mean, as it stands right now, he's not allowed to go to games. He's not allowed to go to practices. He's not allowed to have any decision-making in the front office, but he still technically owns the team.
Mm-hmm.
So what Silver is now doing and seems confident that will be the case is that he's actually trying to get the governors – to buy the team away from him, which would effectively remove him entirely from any association with the Los Angeles Clippers. And I gotta say, I like this move by Silver, not just because Sterling is a supreme D-bag, but also because it's a show of force early in his tenure as commissioner. Because I seem to remember there was a situation, not exactly like this, but a similar high-profile situation very early on. And it may have been Spygate, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Very early on in Roger Goodell's tenure as the commissioner of the NFL, and he totally screwed the pooch and has continued to be very soft on most violators left and right. He's just a completely ineffectual shell of a commissioner. And Silver clearly does not want that to be the image of the legacy that he leaves, because right out of the gate, he's like, banned for life.
Yeah. And it's one of those things. I mean, the effect of this is going to be the players are now hold Adam Silver in such a high regard. It's going to benefit him the rest of his career.
Yeah.
Players have always felt, you know, they were at a point of contention against David Stern. David Stern always, and Kevin Johnson, former NBA player, said it best today. He said, as players, we feel that Adam Silver is not just the owner's commissioner, but we feel that he is the player's commissioner as well. And that's something you could never say about David Stern.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and it's funny because there were owners that didn't like David Stern either. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have Mark Cuban, who famously paid money in order to get one last jab in at him as he walked
Cuban
out the door.
Mark Cuban loves Adam Silver.
Yeah, Mark
even
Cuban.
Before this. So.
Those guys are now besties for sure. Yeah. But it just reminds me of like, you think about Game of Thrones. The first thing Joffrey does when he takes the throne, he kills Ned Stark. Show of force right out of the gate. People know exactly what type of ruler you're going to be immediately. So I feel like this is – I guess what I'm saying is that Adam Silver watches Game of Thrones and is a big fan. And I like it. And I'm really happy that Donald Sterling, who is an 80-year-old miscreant, who has – 20-year-old girlfriend after 20-year-old girlfriend is going to be put on an ice floe now, thankfully.
And the thing is, like, the sentiment that he expressed is actually, I mean, I can just speak from my own personal life. It's pretty common. Like, the only friend I've ever had who I had to almost literally break up with is, I won't say the guy's name, but we were working one day, and we were just working, and he's like, Ellie, you know what? I just couldn't get with Rosario Dawson. And I'm like, well, why? She's beautiful. It's like, oh, she has too much black in her. And I'm like,
said this to you?
Yeah, and then he goes, well.
he said that to you.
Yeah, and then he goes, well, you know, she's really beautiful, but I just couldn't handle how much black she has in her. And I'm like, damn it, man, we can't be friends now.
It's like, I love you're offering him out, too. Friends. Like, is it possibly anything else and not?
Yeah,
that,
I was like, is it maybe? Because, like, maybe it's like a preference thing. I'm not gonna say it's ideal, but at least I can lie to myself. But shit, man, we can't be friends. And, like, That's what when I heard the Sterling remarks, it was like, okay, so it's at its root, you just don't like him. The only thing I had a complaint was, this man he lost the biggest housing discrimination lawsuit in American history,
and it wasn't the only housing discrimination lawsuit brought against him.
Yeah. So it's like this should have happened a while ago, but you know what? If you don't lie low, like O.J. Simpson, that man got off. But now he's in jail because he was too stupid to just keep his mouth shut.
Because they don't take advice from Nate Dogg and Snoop. Just lay low.
Shut up and lay low.
To that point, it's something that a lot of people have been asking. Like, now that he's definitely on the outs, people are just kind of looking for something else to be mad at, and they're wondering why this didn't happen sooner. Well, I mean, you know, in a sense, I can kind of answer that. There was never definitive proof of the way there is this time.
Yeah.
And plus, what he did back then when he said things like he doesn't like Mexican men because they smoke and they just drink and hang around the house, or if in regards to a African American woman who was complaining about her dishwasher not working and causing a flood in her apartment, asked her if she's one of the type of black people who stink. When he was doing these things,
it was all in like a deposition.
All in depositions, but it never caused. It never caused sponsors to drop out. It never affected NBA business. Now he's affecting NBA business because sponsors are dropping out. People don't want to show up to games. Like, that's – you're messing with the NBA's money, man. You can't mess with the NBA's money.
Yeah, and the thing is, right after the recording first hit, I will say there's something just noxious in general about the Clippers front office, because the first thing they did is issue a statement saying, this is the antithesis of who Sterling is. And I'm like – really? Because you have a record of times he's been sued for being a racist.
So how is
this the antithesis of who he is?
This isn't somebody misspeaking and like, I mean, that happens to everybody. You're talking and you just say something, you're like, shit, I didn't mean that. It came out really wrong. And you can look back at your entire life and be like, oh yeah, just no worries.
It seemed to me like the most pathetic attempt to clear his name. It's like, let me see, who probably wrote that? Somebody in their PR department. It's probably some kid. Signs his check? Oh, right, Sterling.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Fuck you.
I mean, that's what a PR department is for. Yeah.
And so then meanwhile, the team is taking off their uniforms that have anything that say Clippers on them and throwing them in the middle. Like, it's clear there was nobody really behind Sterling. Sterling did not have an ally. He probably had people he could push around in that front office.
Yeah.
But he clearly had no allies, and he clearly had nobody that was willing to rally behind him. And I'm so thankful that, you know, because this sets a fucking precedent like nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You just try and pull this shit again and see what happens.
It's an interesting thing because people are talking about, especially the owners now are going to vote whether or not the NBA can force him to sell the team, which it is written in their constitution that they can. What some people are questioning is what essentially started this was a tape recording from a mistress. And a lot of people are wondering if other NBA owners are going to be like, well, he's not the only one with the mistress. What happens if my mistress records something? That's why some people
need to be careful.
Don't say shit.
Yeah.
Your wife and be happy, you assholes.
Yeah, that's the best. Yeah. It's like, well, I can't have sex indiscriminately and just say whatever I want about the minorities?
Well, yeah, clearly, Sterling wasn't having sex indiscriminately.
Yeah, that's why it's going to be an interesting thing when the vote comes out. But yeah, it's also really easy to just not say horrible things about black people.
Yeah. Some of them might have mistresses and might be worried that the mistresses they pick learn how to use a tape recorder. There's like a 1 in 5 chance they figure out that technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
What they're going to be more concerned with is the money. And the money it's going to lose them if a scandal like this breaks. Whereas the PR boost that they will get and probably the surge in income that they will get by standing behind Silver and saying, no, we're very much against this. Even if they are racist themselves.
Yeah, it's just money.
It's one of those situations where right now has got to be the time where you go out of your way to ostracize the racist, especially if you're racist. Like, oh no, he's clearly the problem. Fuck that guy. We don't want his kind around here. No, I mean racist. Damn it. Shit. I don't know what to do.
No, but it's like, I tell you, it's just a situation where they need to get it done, move on, because he could tie the NBA for years in litigation, but I'd say this right now, the players aren't going to go play for him.
Nope.
Because even if you want to sell out, you still have to play in that league, and you can't get any respect once you go play for that man.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing about this, what the outcome may be, is he sounds like a bitter enough kind of guy where he could legitimately just decide he wants to hold on to the team and just run it into the ground. You know, what does that mean actually for the LA Clippers as a franchise if he decides he doesn't want to sell? Because I don't know exactly I don't know the ruling, and if you can force a guy to, if you have to force the guy to sell it, if he's not going to do it voluntarily, then how do you work out things of like, okay, well, what do we pay him? Like, how do you pay him, and how does he decide what the value of the team is if he just doesn't necessarily want to sell it?
Well, you can go
But anyway,
I was going to say, it's definitely a question for a lawyer, so I don't know if Elliot does
it. Well, you go for the fair market value, you give him that. And what you also, what I'm more worried about is that I was reading over that Constitution today. The lawyer who wrote it very vaguely, which is good. You want to write something like that vague if you can't cover the specific situation. The problem's going to come is this guy has billions of dollars, from what I understand. He can afford to hire the best contract lawyers in the nation. And they can walk into federal court and be like, well, I want an injunction. An injunction keeps somebody from doing something. So maybe maybe he can just remain and like,
well, I mean, because like, I guess it sounds like this is a guy who it doesn't sound like he doesn't have any friends to back him up. Mm-mm. Really. Like, nobody is on his side. So, and it doesn't sound like he's going to be the guy to take the high road either.
No.
So when you put somebody like that in a position that they're at, what could the worst outcome actually be?
He stays.
He stays, and then the team decides not to play for him.
Well, that's the thing is I was reading somewhere that certain players were already looking into how to get out of their contracts, citing hostile work environment,
prove that,
and mm-hmm. they can easily. There's a fucking tape that proves that. So
they can contact the EEOC and say, hey, this is what's going on, that's an out.
But as a lawyer, can you actually consider that a hostile work environment if he's not even allowed in the facility anymore?
Well, what you would have, and I'm not an employment law lawyer, so this is just me BSing and coming off of what I know in general. What you would maybe want to argue is that his hiring decisions influence the front office, and even if his person's not there, his attitude and his influence is still there.
Well, part of the language of the ban is that he's no longer has a say in like player personnel decisions or anything like that. What question I have as far as like an injunction, can an injunction rule in favor of the ban itself?
Well, an injunction is going to keep that thing from happening. Okay. So if a court denies the injunction, that's ruling in favor of the ban.
Yeah, yeah.
But if the lawyers say, hey, we want an injunction that can stop the ban.
Okay.
So it sounds like a double negative.
People seem pretty satisfied with the fact that they can lifetime ban him. People are a little iffy on whether or not they can actually force him to sell the team.
I'm pretty sure they can lifetime ban him, but the selling the team, because I was reading the provisions, it's written so vaguely that there's underpinnings of the law, there's policy that says, okay, you can write a contract a certain way, but this is not legal no matter what you say in that piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know how that jives with the underpinnings.
Right.
So you would need like if this goes to court, you're going to have contract law professors. You're going to have experts. It's going to be a mess.
Mm-hmm. The layman's law hour
I have always been curious about today since they were announced.
I took sports law in law school actually, and that was a really interesting course.
Yeah.
I mean, because it sounds like everybody's in a really strange position where if the players can't get out of their contracts and they have to play, or they, I don't know, I guess I don't even know if we can really force the player to play if they don't really want to,
I guess they would just forfeit the money, but I mean,
Donald Sterling would probably opt for using a cattle prod.
So it's strange, like, if you can't get the owner to willingly sell the team, and you can't get the players to necessarily stop playing either.
Yeah.
You're in a position where the fans have to make the decision of, well, okay, then the only way that we can actually make any kind of specific punishment on the man is by not going to the games.
Yeah.
Because we can – that's the only way where he – I mean, because –
it's still not a punishment.
Because if – I mean, if – exact. But I mean, if the team is successful in any way whatsoever, if they're making money, he's making money.
Yeah.
So
the only thing that could happen, and this is relatively feasible even if he does kind of drag out the process, is if – players don't want to play there, and sponsors continue to drop out, and the team becomes less and less successful. Like, the value of that team drops exponentially year after year after year. Like, it's worth X amount now if he just sells. If this goes through and players don't play there, they lose sponsorships.
It's happened in Memphis. Yeah. It happened in New Orleans. When those teams bottom out financially, the league can come in and essentially take over.
Yeah.
So if he really wants to play this game, all it's going to lead to is an even more embarrassing something that happens 3 years from now where nobody wants to play there, they're making no money, and the league comes in and goes, okay, now you're out.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Which, you know, I mean, he could sell the team now for like $700 million,
exactly.
Which is probably not
the golden parachute is still in effect for him, and there's no way he won't take it.
Yeah, and if it continues to devalue three, 4 years from now, if it's only worth $250 million, like, he's going to be kicking
himself. Because if the four of us chuckleheads have figured that out in five minutes, there is a lawyer telling him this right now.
Yeah.
Look, you can fight this all you want. You will spend millions and millions of dollars. And in the end, the NBA is going to own the team anyway, and you'll get nothing.
He's like, I'm happy to take your money.
Take their money now and just get the fuck out.
And I want to mention one minor thing. There's a bunch of people on Twitter talking about how I thought the First Amendment was a thing, and I thought we could say what we wanted. The First Amendment doesn't say that you can say what you – I can't tell JC what I feel like and expect and say
– It doesn't protect you from repercussions.
Yeah. So it's like I can't call JC an asshole and then if Ryan says you're off the podcast, well, what about the First Amendment?
Nope. The First Amendment means I can't call a cop to arrest you for what you said. Yeah, that's all that means. I'm sorry. You can be fired for shit you say. That's not what the First Amendment – you're right. And that, you're right, Elliot. That's a common misconception, is that the First Amendment is just this carte blanche to say and do whatever you want. It's like, that's not what it means.
I mean, it is if you don't give a shit about the repercussions.
Yeah.
There you go.
You're just like, well, fuck it. I do it at once. If you're going to pull a Cartman, you know, then good. Good for you.
Yeah, essentially, the president can't arrest Donald Sterling for what he said, but the NBA can sure as fuck fire him.
So. But even Obama, speaking of the president, even Obama was like, man, that's fucked up.
Really? Yeah. You really think I'm going to be okay with that? Fuck you. Changing gears here and turning our attention to galaxies far, far away. That's right! The cast for Star Wars Episode 7 has been officially announced. And I find it funny that it comes like a week after the release of the Blu-ray of Sorcerer, which was a film that when it was released was completely overshadowed by the release of Star Wars. Anyway.
I feel like Lucy and Charlie Brown.
Just pulling that football away. So the lineup currently includes John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Adam Driver, Andy Serkis, and Domhnall Gleeson, in addition to Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, and Carrie Fisher also returning.
And a whole bunch of cocaine.
Before we say anything else, I gotta, I am so happy for John Boyega. I can't even tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Who's John Boyega?
John Boyega is the main kid from Attack the Block.
Oh, fuck yeah!
Yeah, and from...
I love that guy.
That is the proper reaction.
And from everything we can tell, it looks like he's actually going to be the lead in the movie. So, I am super stoked.
He's got to be an awesome Jedi or something, because he's young. There's no way he's a boring character.
Like, yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy.
I'm curious, and I was really excited, and it's kind of why I missed initially the name John Boyega. I was really excited for Oscar Isaac.
Sure.
Who's Oscar Isaac?
Inside Llewyn Davis.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Inside Llewyn Davis was a movie I loved last year, and Oscar Isaac is a guy who's been in a couple of smaller movies before that, and he was in Drive, a really, really cool role in Drive. He's an actor that I like a lot, and I was super excited to see his name in this cast.
One of the biggest snubs of the Oscar season was, ironically enough, Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a hell of a performance.
And you know what? You know who didn't snub it, though, was J.J. Abrams, clearly, because Adam Driver is also in Inside Llewyn Davis. As the cowboy who makes all the noises during the Please Mr. Kennedy song.
I tell you what, people give Disney a lot of shit, but that mouse knows how to make money.
Yeah.
He's like, look, Marvel, y'all gonna get your shit together. You are not DC.
Well,
and it's like, Star Wars, like, look, no fucking Jar Jar. We're gonna get Andy Serkis if we're gonna have some CG characters.
Well, that's the thing, is we don't know who Andy Serkis is playing, but I'm pretty sure it's not Jar Jar.
Definitely it couldn't be Jar Jar. It's how many more years after?
Well, a logical person with a timeline like that, like to anyone who's not George Lucas, the fact that it's after the prequels means that shit should be showing up in this timeline, because that's how time works, but not if you're George Lucas.
Right, okay.
Hopefully Jar Jar's long dead.
Did you actually mention Max von Sydow as well, though?
Max von Sydow! Oh my gosh, how could I possibly forget? Max? You know why? Because he wasn't in the photograph. I used the photograph as a reference to everyone that was cast. But yes, the great Max von Sydow, who is very much still alive, despite rumors, is going to be... We don't even know who these guys are playing yet, but... I'm excited that they've got young talent, they've got returning talent, and then they've got older talent who haven't been in a Star Wars movie, but have been, like, central to cinema for however many decades.
Yeah. I gotta say also, like, not to play devil's advocate, but, I'm very excited about the cast. The cast sounds amazing, but if the same announcement had come out, which it probably did when Phantom Menace came out, you're like, Ewan McGregor, Liam Neeson, Sam Jackson, Natalie Portman?
Yeah.
The kid from Jingle All the Way.
Okay, no, see, that's bullshit. That I will call bullshit on. Nobody said that one time.
Except for a bunch of pedophiles.
There was not a single person who said, the kid from Jingle All the Way.
Maybe the guy from Family Guy.
I'm sure there are a lot of people who are like, Adam Driver, but like, I'm not a big fan of the show Girls, and I'm not even necessarily a fan of his character in it. But he's something he, about
hold
him.
On, hold on. Elliot's giggling because he thought you meant Showgirls. No, the show.
I'm sorry, I'm 12.
Girls. He wasn't in the movie Showgirls. He's on the show Girls.
I know. I know. It's fine.
So I'm not even particularly a huge fan of Adam Driver's character in that show. But something about when I watch the show anyway, even though I don't like
Girls
it,
is good.
There's something about his character and watching him on the show. It's like there's a great actor in there. It's just not on this small screen in this role. But like he's a genuine talent.
Yeah, starting from the bottom.
Now he's here. John Boyega in Attack the Block has already... He's somebody I've been pulling for ever since that movie came out. And he's proven adept at facing aliens, even in close quarters combat, which will be interesting. But what we have here...
He can wield a sword.
He can wield a sword. What we basically have with this announcement, to put it in sports terms, is the twilight of the film's free agency period. Mm. I mean, the roster has been assembled. So, guys, overall, now that you... I mean, there's still a couple more roles to be cast, apparently. But just based on this team, what do we think? I mean, does it raise our enthusiasm for this? I mean, it seems like when Episode 7 first got announced, there was kind of widespread optimism. And with every subsequent announcement, people have just been kind of waning in their enthusiasm. So does this announcement do anything for your enthusiasm for Episode 7?
Yes. No, I think it's inspired. Like, okay, if you were to go to any actor whatsoever and say, hey, would you like a role in Star Wars Episode 7? This is basically, it's the New York Yankees. You can hire anybody you want. You know, the budget is limitless. The number of people who want to come work for you is limitless. So it seems like they did at least took a look at what characters they had written for the script, and they went for the actors. And I don't know, it seems hard to say that because I haven't read the script, and I don't know exactly whether or not this can be considered inspired casting or not. But it doesn't seem like they didn't go for stars in any capacity whatsoever. They went for people that it seems like they have specific ideas of what they want their characters to be, and they went for the actors it looks like who they want to fill those roles. Mm-hmm. So that seems at least like they knowing that they could have gone to anybody whatsoever to work with to fill any roles that they wanted, they chose actors who showed something in prior roles who they want to, I assume, assume a specific kind of character. And that at least leads me to believe that they're going towards the right direction. So,
fair enough.
J.J. Abrams is directing it, correct?
Yep.
Okay, I mean, I love the 2009 Star Trek, and what this casting reminds me a lot of is, and it hasn't borne fruit yet, but I love the Guardians of the Galaxy casting. There's only one person that I wish had been cast different, and that's Drax as Daniel Bautista, just because I don't think he has the gravitas. But everybody else in that cast is just like, yep, they're a little bit smaller actor, but we want them. We want this person, this person, this person. This is why we're getting them. Chris Pratt. So you see... I see this, and it's like, okay, you're actually casting for the role. It's like if you're building an all-star team, if you're building the dream team in the 2000s, all they wanted was all-stars. But when they started winning again, they started saying, well, who can actually play the role that we need them to do? And this seems like what they were doing. They're composing their team. They're making sure it's cohesive. And the only regret I have is I just really wish, and I'm not joking, I really wish they could get Liam Neeson, Natalie Portman, Ewan McGregor, and Samuel Jackson back for like a flashback scene to have a director that really knows how to direct so that we can have at least one scene with them actually acting really well.
Yeah, but I mean, I think at this point...
Because it's not fair to those great actors that they got acting...
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, and I agree with it, but the problem is that we're now three movies removed from that story,
I don't know
what they could possibly flashback to that would bear any relevance.
No, and it wouldn't. That's more of a thing that I'm... I like some of the... I like the second and third one, but only as an effects reel. Like, I think some of the effects are great, but the acting is so wooden.
Yeah, absolutely.
To kind of expand upon Charles's point about, like, how they didn't go after, like, big-name actors, like, to kind of put a sports comparison on it, even though I'm a fan of the Miami Heat, they didn't necessarily go that round of, like, getting, like, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and, like, Leonardo DiCaprio and just, like,
those Dwayne The Rock Wade.
Yeah. You know, instead, they assembled a team more like the 2004 Pistons. A bunch of people that, amongst diehard basketball fans that year, were like, holy shit, that's a good team.
Huh.
Diehard film fans, people were like, John Boyega? How many people have heard of Attack the Block?
You know what? That's a good point.
That's a great point.
They put a great cast together, but they put a great cast together of people that, like, diehard film fans are going to know and not a lot of mainstream people, which is great. Because it means that they're not just shooting for the biggest. They're not just going, oh, we need Brad Pitt. We basically need the entire cast of Ocean's 11 because they're the biggest names on the marquee currently. But you know what? You know, I didn't think about that. But that's great that they are looking at people who have proven themselves in the performance and not as box office draws. Yeah.
Well, you know, you're saying that reminds me of Star Trek. It's like the biggest star in Star Trek before it came out was Siler, I forgot his name.
Yeah, Zach Quinto.
Say, you know what, we're gonna, and they made a star out of Chris Pine.
Yeah, Chris Pine had like a shot at it, and his career was fading
because he had Carriers before that. If I remember, right.
Yeah, and he had done like these romantic comedies, and nothing was panning out. But then, bam, Star Trek. That's absolutely right.
You know, this it sounds a lot like how. It's not Kurt Russell that built the Miracle Team, but anyway,
for all intents and purposes,
exactly. You know, he's choosing the players that he wants to fit the positions to beat, you know, to live up to expectations. You know,
yeah.
And it sounds like that's what they're doing. So
I think obviously there's still a lot of wait and see here, but I really like this cast they've put together, and I'm very anxious to hear what roles they'll be playing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mostly just glad that there's, like, official news. Like, part of the reason why it's if you would have asked me before today, it would have seemed like I wasn't all that excited, because I'd have been like, well, what's real and what's not? Like, now this is, like, legit news.
Because it was Star Wars, it was Disney, and it was Abrams.
Yeah.
Like, you had three levels of different secrecy and lies and clandestine.
Especially lies with Abrams.
Yeah, exactly.
That motherfucker just lies.
Don't believe a word. In fact, I'm not even convinced this is the cast. I think he may have tweeted a fake picture. Yeah. Maybe we should keep our eyes peeled there.
And this movie comes out in 2015, right?
2016, I believe.
I wish, like, if Doc Brown came to me and said, hey, you have three trips to go back in time, let me tell you what they would be.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry, I'm wrong. As of right now, it's still listed as December of 2015, but I thought they got moved.
They moved it from summer to December, that's right.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's like, I would go back in time and redo my college years because I did them wrong and I didn't party enough. I'd go back in time and I would invest in Apple. But then the last thing I would do is I would go forward in time, get some cryo tube technology to freeze people, and I would try to find. And then I would go back in time to 1999 and find every Star Wars geek I could find who was so excited for the Phantom Menace. And I'd be like, "You don't want this.
This is not what you want.
I'm gonna freeze you until about 2016." And you're going to just love what comes out.
How about we just freeze Lucas before he makes the prequels?
That makes more sense.
Because it'll be cheaper. And I don't think like Lucas. I don't just throw money at problems. I'm actually trying to reason this out. No. Anyway, we've talked about a sports story. We've talked about a story involving geek properties. Let's do one that mashes both together. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Israel Adonijé. That's right. Chicago Bears defensive end Israel Adonijé was at Chicago Comic-Con last weekend to promote, not football, but the number one issue of The Protectors, which is a comic book he created.
Wow.
This is really bizarre. JC, tell us a little bit more about The Protectors.
Okay, so yeah, The Protectors is based on a character, Isaac Chike? I don't know. Like Adonijé is a bald, bearded defensive end, came from Africa as a child. His desire is to do good off of the football field.
And work at McDowell's.
It's kind of like it's a comic book character of the, what was that show in the 90s with Michael Jordan?
From Co-Stars.
Yeah.
I was saving that joke.
So it's kind of like that because the other protectors within this group are an NBA player, an NHL player, Major League Baseball, women's professional soccer. Just a lot of really cool things. And
God,
from this,
awesome.
Adonijé is just and Lance Briggs also are both big comic book geeks. And they're two of the toughest defensive players in the NFL.
Yeah,
that's kind of the essence of what the show is all about. Like, we, you know, talk about people who don't have to be one side or the other. Well, here are professional NFL football players who are totally both comic book geeks and obviously athletes.
And Lance Briggs is a star defensive player.
And Adonijé is on the rise, man. He's one of those guys that will be a star. Give it a season or two. I do find it funny that he felt the need to specifically say that this is not autobiographical, despite the fact that it seems like it is. Because it's like the only part at this point that doesn't sound like it's based on you is the superpower part. So thank you for clearing the air so that we don't think you actually have superpowers.
So is he the creator of the series, or is he just a character that somebody based
on? No, he created it.
He created the series.
Like, yeah, back in training camp in 07, apparently.
It's like, thank you, Woody Allen.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's probably, he probably didn't delve too much about this in the interview, but it's probably something he's doing in secret. And I bet I can picture the scenario now. Like Lance Briggs just kind of stumbles upon it and is like, hey, man, what are you doing? You drawing a comic book? Holy shit, I love comic books too.
And then he feels like, see, this is that thing that I was talking about where you have the other side of the coin, which is you have people who are jocks, who are in that world, who feel like they have to be in the closet about liking nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome to me that it's like, no, we're going to make a comic book together because we're Chicago Bears players and we love comics.
Is he the writer-illustrator?
I don't think he's the illustrator, but he's definitely the creator and probably has a co-writer.
Huh. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's awesome. I think, like JC said, it's pretty much the essence of the show that we do here. And
yeah.
It's a story that just makes me smile. So thank you very much, Adonijay. We will probably stock up on issues of The Protectors over at Rogues Gallery Comics and Games
in Round Rock, Texas.
Before we move on, a quick update from our VY drone. This is the highly expensive, highly inefficient unmanned aircraft that tracks the whereabouts of former University of Texas quarterback Vince Young. He apparently has a workout scheduled with the Cleveland Browns, which officially means one thing and one thing only.
This is the end. My only friend, the end.
Yes, that's exactly what it means. This is the end, Vince Young. So
man, the Browns love sticking Longhorn quarterbacks on their bench.
Yeah. Yep. They should do. They just like the Eagles apparently love doing it with with USC bust outs. Because right now they've got
Bush?
They've got Mark Sanchez and they've got
Matt Leinart.
Really? Yep, that's their bench. So the Eagles love USC the way that Cleveland apparently loves Texas.
Like
at least they love their disappointments.
Right.
Like I'm hearing the story and I'm trying to make a joke, but this just makes me sad.
It's going to be his last shot.
Well, he filed for bankruptcy, so he has one shot to make a team to earn $500,000 or so, and get something back for his bank account.
But we say that, but this guy's been given a hell of a lot of last shots.
Yeah, he's
like
been...
that Eminem song would be much different if you had 8 shots
to blow it
to seize everything you ever wanted. Would you capture it or just keep letting it slip because you're fucking Vince Young?
And like this isn't I don't know what it is. Like at least Jamarcus Russell, he's just lazy. Like Vince Young, I don't know what the hell's wrong with this man.
Well, I think the complete mental breakdown didn't help, but I don't think it was solely the cause for his decline. But
yeah. I mean, because I think it was his first two years in the league. He took him to the playoffs and he went to the Pro Bowl both years.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not like he didn't have the. He didn't just completely come into the league like Matt Leinart and just, throw a goose egg from the beginning, He showed promise and he had seasons where you could see like the glimpse of it. And then all of a sudden, just like 2 games into his 3rd season and he just doesn't even want to play anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we will keep you updated as this story develops. And by that, I mean until he just gives up.
Like tomorrow he's gone.
Until we have beaten everything out of this.
I really don't take any pleasure in this. I really wanted the guy to succeed.
No.
I liked it when, Vince Young was one of the quarterbacks that I got to watch the Colts play against twice a year. But unfortunately, it's one of those stories where a lot of promise doesn't end up yielding results. But before we move on to our second segment, I want to talk really briefly about this rumor. And I don't even want to talk about whether or not it's the right thing to do or whether or not it's something that's going to happen. Basically, what I'm talking about is this rumor going around that the Dallas Cowboys are actually going to trade to move up and take Johnny Manziel as the quarterback in the NFL draft.
It sounds like a good idea.
Now, you have to remember, Tony Romo just signed a $108 million 6-year contract. So moving up and paying to get Johnny Manziel as the number one pick is idiotic is the word that I'm thinking
of. But right in line with Dallas.
That's the question that I want to ask, Elliot. Don't apologize. Is this a move that Jerry Jones would conceivably make?
Yep.
All right, so there you go. Because we don't even need to talk about whether it will happen, whether it's the right thing to do, because no, it's not the fucking right thing to do. It's an idiotic move, but it's something we could all see Jerry Jones doing.
For as ridiculous as it sounds, it sounds exactly like something Jerry Jones would do.
The mad scientist in his laboratory is probably going to try and play God a couple more times.
This is a guy who, he drafted Quincy Carter in the first round, back in like 2003, 2004, something like that. Quincy Carter is, a player who was projected to go third round at the earliest that year. And they did it almost again this past year. Now, it actually worked out fairly well. Travis Frederick, who's the center that they drafted in the first round, also was expected to go later in the second round, possibly earlier in the third round, and they traded down to get him. I think they – I can't remember exactly what they got in the trade, but he was somebody that they were eyeing, they wanted to take, but he was somebody that they probably could have gotten much later and gotten a potentially better player in that position when they drafted, and they just – I don't know exactly – they lucked into Travis Frederick actually working out because he actually had a really good rookie season, and he was probably one of the better defensive linemen aside from Anton Smith, their left tackle.
Yeah,
they just do really fucked up things on draft day.
Yep. It's one of those things. Yeah, like if they wanted to wait, conceptually, Minnesota Cowboys makes sense a little bit, and scheme wise and things like that. But, yeah, they don't have to trade up to get him, and if it's...
I mean, scheme, plot, plot, but do they really want to move up to get him in that number one spot?
No, they definitely shouldn't move up to get him, and it's just kind of one of those things, it's like, just wait, man, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be.
And not just that, but I mean, like, you're going to move up, if that was to happen, if you're going to move up to the, because you have to move up to the first spot in order to guarantee that you get him. So, whatever it is they trade to Houston for that... you're going to trade up to the first spot to conceivably either have him ride the bench for a good 2 years. Like, what happens if Tony Romo actually works out? What happens if they win the Super Bowl this coming up year? You moved up, you traded away your first round draft pick to take a player who you're going to legitimately leave on the bench for as long as Tony Romo is actually being successful.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, Adam, if the Cowboys win the Super Bowl this year, I will throw my skates on and head down to hell. But, Elliot, you had a point you were going to make.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What if the Cowboys traded Romo to Houston for the number one pick?
I think that was part of it, too. But the thing is, they're still going to have to eat a lot of that contract.
No, I'm not talking about Dallas. I'm talking about how good would Houston be? Because Romo's better than what he seems like on the Cowboys. Like, if you give him the weapons that Houston has, like, all of a sudden Houston's
that's the same thing you say about Dallas. I mean... Yeah. Houston has less weapons, I think, than Dallas does.
Yeah,
but they don't have. You know, you're right.
I mean, it's a toss up. I would justifiably swap out Arian Foster for DeMarco Murray. I would justifiably take Des Bryant over Andre Johnson, especially at this point in his career. Mm-hmm. Or, okay, fine. At least take the Dallas receiving core versus Houston.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. No, you're right.
Yeah. So
I like Romo. And I feel like he's just not getting the full judgment from the team he's on.
Let me tell you what I think his biggest problem is, though, is that when the game is on the line, he tends to tries to be Superman, and it ends up biting him in the ass.
Yeah.
And the place that's not going to improve for him is Houston.
That's true.
Because there's nothing about Houston that says, oh, huge lead we're going to jump out to in every game.
Yeah.
But the one thing that he would have in Houston that he does not have in Dallas is he has a defense in Houston. Like... Houston has got a defense. And he actually has a rapport with Wade Phillips, who's a coach there. So, I mean, I guess if things were to work out, that would be the only way where I could see Houston trading down to Dallas' spot. Because they're not going to want to take their first round. They're not going to want to, I think, squander their first round pick for Dallas' placement this year without getting at least a... They would need Dallas to not only take their first round from them this year and then give them whatever it is they're going to give them from next year's draft. They would need Dallas to fail this year, too.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess I should say that was the deal that was on the table.
Okay.
Was trade Romo to Houston to get that number one pick to take Manziel. But what I was talking about is that huge contract they just signed with him. It doesn't make sense that they would eat that money, get rid of him, and get somebody who is completely untested in the NFL.
Right.
It just makes – but, like we were saying, it's well within the wheelhouse of lunacy that is Jerry Jones. So we'll have to keep an eye on that.
We just need the NFL draft to happen. Like, we're bored.
Man. I know.
Yeah, no, I agree.
We're going through the motions.
Like this, I agree. The NFL draft would be long and done by now if this were last year. Like,
I'm sorry. If Houston passes up the chance to have J.J. Watt on one side and Jadeveon Clowney on the other in their defense, they're doing everything wrong.
Yeah.
That's my two cents. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have our very special guest join us to talk about the NBA playoff picture as it is right now. And then after that, we're going to answer some of your questions. So stick with us. It only gets sweatier, and it only gets nerdier.
You're a little bit racist.
Well, you're a little bit too.
I guess we're both a little bit racist.
Admitting it is not an easy thing to do.
But I guess it's true.
Between me and you, I think everyone's a little bit racist sometimes. Doesn't mean we go around committing hate crimes. Look around and you will find no one.
And we're back because we never really left because there's not anywhere to go in this office building. So
you won't let us leave.
Well, that too. I refuse to let you guys leave. But we are back to talk about the NBA playoff picture. And obviously there's a lot going on right now. We've already talked a lot about the NBA and certain things that are going on. But believe it or not, basketball is still going on in the NBA. So that's what we're going to talk about right now. And joining us to help us break down all of the chaos that is the NBA playoffs is a good friend of the show, Mr. Physics.
Hey, how's everybody doing? Physics here. Glad to be here and to talk about my favorite sport of all time, the NBA.
I thought foosball was your favorite sport of all time.
No, not after Balls of Fury. Not after that.
But it had Maggie Q.
It was also about ping pong, but we're not going to hold that against him.
Yeah. I know, that's why. And we're from foosball to ping pong. I mean, only good foosball is a community episode with the Germans, but that's about
that,
it.
That's a good point. That's true. That's a very good point.
I missed that episode.
So,
it's a really good episode.
It is a good episode. The Nick Kroll from The League plays one of the Germans, and it's there's
no,
like
I remember now. Yeah, yeah,
there's like an anime segment. The one with an anime portion. You don't remember that episode?
When I think about foosball, I think community. I think of the remark in the G.I. Jeff episode where Cobra Commander's trying to talk. He's talking to Duke from G.I. Joe. He's like, I make fun of you, but you look like some Aryan foosball player.
That's true. That is exactly what all of the G.I. Joe characters look like. Now, from G.I. Joe, talking about the NBA playoffs. No. This happens. I'm not really sure where to start on this, so I will just go ahead and, in full deference, I will throw my Indiana Pacers under the bus. I do not know what the hell is going on. I don't know who built what house on what Indian graveyard, but the Pacers are in danger of being eliminated. The number one seed in the East, which is like, the East. Yeah. The number one seed in the East are seconds away. And by seconds, I mean a game away from being eliminated by the goddamn Atlanta Hawks. What the hell is going on here?
Well, maybe the Atlanta Hawks are just really motivated that Outkast got back together.
That could be it.
I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, yeah. 1 year anniversary.
Yep. bombs over Indiana.
I mean, yeah. one of the biggest problems Indiana's had, and it's been a problem all year, is they're a good defensive team usually, but they're not a great offensive team. And Atlanta is a team that shoots the lights out. They had a dude last night named Michael Scott. Yep, that's his name.
Doing it sold some paper afterwards.
He came off the bench, scored 17 points in the second quarter alone, hit 5 threes. Yeah.
Well, they were playing in Dunder Mifflin Stadium, so you can understand why he was on fire that night. I don't know. Physics, can you, like, I feel like I need to take myself out of this discussion a little bit because I'm a bit of a homer when it comes to the Pacers, but I feel like we've had an entire season of great play to back up my confundery, which is not a word, but I'm going to make it a word. So what is your take on what the hell's going on with the Pacers?
You've had a great season until the last 2 months. The last 2 months became kind of hell during that whole number one, two shift in between Miami Heat and Indiana Pacers. Everything kind of caught up to him. Paul George is really good off the ball when it comes to scoring, but when it comes to creating his own shot, it's just too much for him. And one of the huge reasons, especially for this playoffs, is the Atlanta Hawks big men are all good shooters. You have Paul Millsap, a.k.a. Trillsap. You also have I can't remember his name at the moment, Antrick. And he's a center that shoots from the three. And when that happens, Roy Hibbert has to come out. Yeah. And Roy Hibbert is not around the rim. And due to that, Roy Hibbert becomes obsolete. There's no reason to keep him on the court. And at this moment, he has the worst player efficiency of all time in the playoffs. His efficiency is 0.8 the moment. And he's scoring 4.8 points a game, getting 3.4 rebounds at 7-2. Because he's nowhere near the rim to get any rebounds, and his personal fouls per game is 3. So that's the only thing that he has kept going is his fouls. So he's fouling out of games. He can't give anything to him, and right now Vogel's basically thinking about benching him for the next game because they have no other route to go to try to win. And it really looks like the Hawks have them. They are a good team to go against as far as matchups, and the matchup is winning.
Yeah, he's got more personal fouls than he does made baskets in this entire series.
Isn't like player efficiency something like the SATs? Don't you get like 0.9 just for showing up to the game?
It's a really weird formula, similar to the quarterback rating.
It's just like I just imagine the rest of the team is like, Hibbert, you are here to help us, not fuck us up.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't been playing in the fourth quarter, and the fourth quarter they've actually been doing pretty well. So it's probably time to bench him.
Well, could it be the problem with... Please correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the Pacers were not built exclusively, but they've really been taking pains to say, okay, well, we're going to go against the Heat.
But I vehemently deny that because that's what the press has been saying. Okay. But it's like, if you can find me one actual soundbite of any of the Pacers saying anything about the Heat,
I'm talking about the front office.
What's been happening is you have ESPN developing this culture of drama because, like any network, that's what they want. So they've been working on this, number one, number two. They were doing this because the only two teams worth talking about in the East were the Pacers and the Heat. And that's fine, but then they just, then you got the Heat saying things like, when they don't like us and they talk trash about us, and it's like, no, that's never happened. You are completely fabricating that.
I was wondering more if they had been sort of like, okay, we want to build a cohesive team. We don't want to go star versus star. We just want to beat you with depth.
Yeah.
And maybe that having that depth leads you to not really looking at an overall matchups game just because you think, I have everything covered. You're not really playing strategy. You're just playing – it's like – I'll give you a perfect example. When I'm playing real – this is so nerdy. When I'm playing real-time strategy games, one of the things I tend to run into problems with is I'm focusing so much on logistics, like making sure my supply chain is good, my economy is good, that my opponent will beat me a lot of the time because they're using the special units.
You're going to settle the fuck out of Catan, though, and I believe that. I believe in you, Elliot.
So it's like maybe they were so focused on, okay, we got these players that are really solid that maybe they need somebody who just can score off the ball maybe they need that other bump.
It could be. And it could be that all of the trade stuff going on, messing with that lineup, maybe it threw them out of rhythm. I don't know. All I know is that I don't want... The biggest reason I don't want the Atlanta Hawks to eliminate the Pacers isn't even my fandom of the Pacers. I just don't want the assholes at ESPN to be right with their ludicrous theory that the Heat intentionally went for number two so that they could play the Bobcats. Like they were Loki in the Avengers. Like, oh no, I wanted to get caught. Fuck you. Bullshit. I'm calling bullshit on that entire theory. They just got number two. They weren't good enough for number one. You needed another storyline to talk about.
But see, Brian, as somebody who went through what you're going through right now, I I'm not making fun. I'm completely serious when I say this. I feel your pain because after the year that LSU beat Alabama in the regular season, then just lost horribly in the championship game.
Yeah,
we still don't know what happened in that game, and it still bothers every LSU fan. So I know how you must feel to sit here and watch this team you love. Just like, and it's even worse because yours is like over the course of several games.
Yeah,
mine was just one and done. It's like. Just to be like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, I just want to know what's going on so I can know who to be mad at.
I don't know if Peyton Manning can be a verb, but I feel like Roy Hibbert is Peyton Manning right now. Peyton Manning. Because that was always the thing that plagued us, as Colts fans. It's like we would do so well all throughout the regular season, and then first game of the playoffs, or God forbid we come up against the fucking Patriots, and it would just all be for naught. But you know what? that's one series of, I think, eight, so maybe I shouldn't spend all the time talking about that. But Miami's already knocked off Charlotte, so I don't know.
Well, there was a...
I don't know what we could talk about there.
Well, I mean, that one, Charlotte had the unfortunate luck of Al Jefferson...
yeah, that's what I was going to say,
having
right.
plantar fasciitis, because the game that LeBron put up 61, a lot of people don't remember. In that game, Al Jefferson put up 38 points and 19 rebounds. Like, he was damaging to the Heat, and then... In that first quarter of the first game, he got hurt.
They should at least won one if he wasn't hurt.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been as sweet.
Wouldn't have been quite as sweet. But
yeah.
So who are they going to go on and play now, likely?
So Miami plays the winner of Toronto and Brooklyn, which is tied 2-2. And that series is probably going to go 7, which is
probably
awesome.
The way, yeah. The way it's been going, it's been a really good series.
Physics, you remember when the Nets started this season and they were a complete Ishtar? Like, they were, like, every measure by which you could fail, they had found a way to do that.
Yeah, I remember, and that was funny because last time I was on was during the Jason Kidd soda incident. So, full circle right now.
Full circle. Yeah. So yeah. What? How did they turn that shit around?
Defense. One, they changed their lineup. They brought Paul Pierce as a power forward, and the thing is, you know, most power forwards cannot guard Paul Pierce, so... The opponent, power forward, got screwed having to guard him, and then you had the athletic Mason Plumlee, you know, playing center. And this all happened due to the luck of Kevin Garnett getting injured. So due to that, they've been balling out of control. Their defense has become really great, especially getting off the ball steals and defending their man. So that Paul Pierce. Balling like he's actually got 5 years, you know, added on to his career. And now, because Kevin Garnett's back, but he's not really doing much. One of the games during the series, he didn't score until the fourth quarter. And those 2 points was the points that put him over so they could win the game. But he's basically right now just a body out there and not really doing much. He's basically the energy, but nothing's coming out of, you know, his output on the court, his input on the court.
Hmm.
There's another adjustment they made that I really like that I'm happy for just because I like this guy. Sean Livingston was also inserted in the starting lineup around January, and that's the time that they kind of turned it around too. And he, a lot of people don't remember, he was with Atlanta, right?
When
he hurt his knee, yeah. He was going up for a layup. Wasn't even a dunk, just a layup. Landed really awkwardly. Nobody was around him. Just tore every ligament in his knee. People thought his career was over, and it was like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's something one like of that, the worst injuries I ever seen because his leg went backwards.
Yeah.
Was Tanya Harding anywhere around there?
No, or Joe Theismann?
Nobody was around him, which it was weird. And it's been 5 or 6 years, and this is the first year that he's kind of like he's relevant again. It's great to see.
Well, yeah. Obviously, it's going to be interesting, I think, to see what happens when Miami faces I guess Brooklyn is who I think is going to pull this out, but
it's
been such a toss-up, and surprisingly so. I mean, isn't Toronto the team that made it into the playoffs on a last-minute bucket of the last game of the season? Or am I thinking of some other team? But there was literally one of the teams in the East that their fate wasn't sealed until the very last game, and they won that game on a...
Yeah, I mean, they were always going to be in the playoffs. It's just the seeding depended on a lot of... The last day of the season, that was any one of 22 different seeding outcomes that were going to happen based on who beat who. Brooklyn's probably going to win that series, and I know Brooklyn went 4-0 against Miami during the season, but to kind of expand upon Physics' point about Paul Pierce playing power forward... One of the advantages that the Miami Heat has is that LeBron James can defend all five positions. If
right.
you put Paul Pierce at the four, he's going to guard Paul Pierce.
He'll just shut him down.
Yeah. First base, Bugs Bunny. Second base, Bugs Bunny. Flying catcher, Bugs Bunny. Yeah, I'm always reminded. So, Physics, do you think Brooklyn's going to pull it out over the Raptors in that series?
I'm kind of leaning towards the Raptors. It's really weird. Right now, it really feels like their offense is picking up. DeMar DeRozan is... You know, taking everybody off the dribble right now. So, and they can't, once he takes them off the dribble, they can't guard him. And I think he's figured that out by now. And then, of course, Kyle Lowry could get to the rim anytime he wants. And then you also have, they shoot the lights out at times. So I kind of lean in towards Toronto winning it, but I think it's going to go 7 games.
Right on. Well, also, probably the biggest surprise in the East, you know, aside from the Pacers kind of collapsing like a cheap card table, is the fact that Washington is up 3-1 over Chicago. The Washington, who I still refer to as the Washington Bullets, yeah. because I forget that they're still a team.
Yeah.
not only did they make the playoffs, but they are up 3-1 over the Chicago Bulls.
Yes.
What's going on there?
I figured this was going to happen in during the middle of the year. Chicago Bulls are a great defensive team, but once they lost Derrick Rose, they lost their offense. They really have no offense. Their second and third best scorers are off the bench. And that's, I can't remember names at the moment.
Tony but, Kukoc. Yeah.
No, not Tony Kukoc. Oh,
okay. About 20 years too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they wish it was Tony Kukoc, but
actually, they do wish it was Tony Kukoc.
Off the bench, so their starting lineup is really doing nothing minus Joakim Noah when it comes to scoring, and they're going against a team where for some reason they cannot guard Nene. It seems that Joakim Noah's great defensive prowess has disappeared against Nene. Nene starts shooting from about 14, 15 feet, and he stays right there and just shoots. All night, just keep scoring, and there's nothing they can do about it. And the only reason they won, I believe it was game three, is because Nene did a bonehead thing and got ejected out of the game. And it was Taj Gibson and Gigi Augustine are their second and third best scorers.
Yeah,
so
right.
When your bench players are your best scorers, and you gotta have Nene get kicked out and have Mike Dunleavy go for 35 points, which is something that's happened every, full moon, and as Wesley Snipes said, a white man can't jump, the sun shines on a dog's ass every now and then.
like that reference. Very nice.
Yes, but their luck ran out because, they can't score, and defense can only get you so far in the NBA because you still got to score at the end of the day.
I'm actually not surprised that Joakim Noah suddenly can't guard Nene, because Nene is a Swedish word that means kryptonite. And, no one's reporting on this, and that's fine. There aren't a lot of linguists in the sports networks, but that is something few people will tell you. But I'll be honest, because I'm a straight shooter.
Well, I tell you what, it sounds like if you want to guard Nene, the Bulls need to go ahead and get Martin. Martin will kick Nene out just like they always do. He'll be fine. And anybody who's pushing 30 like me will get that joke.
That's awesome. People who think that people who don't know that Martin Lawrence didn't start out in Bad Boys.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh yeah,
yeah.
Damn.
Well, there you have it. So that's kind of what's going on in the East. I mean, you have what's likely to be an Atlanta Washington conference semifinal, which still has me scratching my head.
Which sounds like a legal conference.
It really does.
The Atlanta-Washington conference. Oh, they're playing basketball.
But yeah. Much like the rest of the year, the real exciting series to watch, the real exciting games to watch have been in the West. And specifically, I want to talk about...
The West is goddamn ridiculous this year.
I want to talk about Saturday's game between Dallas and San Antonio.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, that game, I don't know, I didn't know it was possible... But they made Vince Carter relevant again.
Holy shit.
Vince Carter, I think the last time he hit a game-winning shot, I was graduating high school.
Vinsanity!
And yet, somehow, he becomes the hero for Brooklyn, for Dallas, the one they really needed at that moment. And it was just such a tight game the whole way. And it came down to those last minutes. And then you had, Ginobili driving in and sinking a bucket that gave them the 2-point lead with a second and a half left.
Yeah.
That was it. A second and a half. It looked like it was over. And then their last ditch effort was Dallas kicked it in. They got it to Vince Carter on the edge. Worst looking shot I've ever seen. He was falling backwards. He was pirouetting. He looked like Black Swan out there. And yet, boom, nothing but net. And the entire – we were at a bar, and it was divided right in half between Spurs fans and Mavericks fans, and the whole place just went crazy no matter who you were rooting for, because it was an incredible ending. I mean, that was probably one of the better playoff endings I've seen so far this year. Did you get a chance to see that game, Physics?
Oh, yes. I was watching it live, and – man, it kind of reminded me of the 76ers game he had when he was with Toronto and the day he graduated and flew back to the game. And he had that almost game winner, but he missed the shot. And it was like the exact same shot. He did a pump fake. Then he went for the shot and he faded away. He missed it for the 76ers game. But you know, he hit it this one, and, you know, it's great to see that he's no longer half man, half dead, so I appreciate that.
I kind of had the same thought, because I thought back to that same exact series, because Iverson is my favorite player, and I think in that series for two or three games in a row, somebody had 2 50-point games. Was it Vince Carter or was it Allen Iverson?
It was Iverson.
Okay, so Iverson had 1 50-point game. Vince Carter answered him with another 50-point game, and Iverson had another 50-point game. But that series was insane. And, yeah, a lot of people gave Vince Carter crap because he went to his college graduation the morning of that game.
So when I said the last time he hit a game-winning shot was during my graduation, I wasn't terribly far off.
No, you're not. Like, man, he's like, got 2003?
Yeah. Yep,
that's when I graduated high school.
Yeah, he's 38, I think.
Jesus Christ, he's still playing?
He's still a couple of times this year, has had a couple of highlights where he still kind of gets up there. And it's
I love sports in that he's 38 years old, and we're talking about him as if he's Anthony Hopkins in Noah, yeah, who was playing Methuselah, because it's just like, what, 38 and still playing in professional sports? God, Grandpa, get out of the way.
Well, same with Kobe. He's 35, and you're like, man, he is old.
Well, I just wish he would shut the fuck up on Twitter. Is what I wish about Kobe.
You could say that Vince. Could you say that Vince Carter is a bit of a fossil?
I maybe.
Just maybe.
I don't get it. I was trying to get
Raptor.
It. Okay, all right. It was a long walk around the block.
Just a tip to all the people out there. It's not a good joke if you have to walk people to it. That's on me.
No. Take me through it, Elliot.
Fossil, you know, like.
Be my Sherpa. Be my Sherpa on this journey of the joke. That's what I want.
I should have said Sam Neill from Jurassic Park.
You know, some people believe that Vince Carter never really went extinct. He just became a bird and flew away.
That'd be hilarious.
Right? And, I want to change the dialogue of Jurassic Park now.
And you know who told me that? My wife. She's an ornithologist.
It's not the Vince Carter you see. It's the two from the sides.
It's the one on the outside that you think you've got guarded and then throws up a three-point shot that wins the game. Oops! Yeah, so, I mean, this is obviously, it's gone to 2-2. This is kind of a toss-up of a series between two really great teams. How do you see this one shaking out, Physics?
Man, I have no idea. At the beginning, I thought, you know, the Spurs were getting in, you know, five games. I really couldn't see the Mavericks keeping up, because the Spurs have this ability of winning even when they're playing horrible. I never understood. They could be down 20 and the Spurs are always in the game. It's just, you know, that Popovich system. So I didn't really give Mavericks a chance. Now that we're here, I really feel that if in the game you have Dirk scoring around 20-plus, and especially Monte scoring 20-plus. They didn't score 20-plus, both of them, last game, so they lost that one. If they are scoring that way, it's the Mavericks, but it's hard to go against the Spurs, man. They're just, you know, I'm trying to find a comic book character, but I don't know. They're almost like Batman. It's like, you know, who could be, you know, who's better than the Spurs? It's like nobody. It's like almost, and I hate them because I'm a Suns fan. So it's really, you know, for me to pick them hurts.
Well, the Spurs are more like Captain America in that they're so virtuous that they're a little bit boring. But when you really stop and watch them do their shit, they're really fucking good. They're just
very efficient.
That's pretty apt, actually.
Yeah.
Although I hope that the Pacers are listening to the lesson that you can win even when you're not playing so well.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go into a shit spiral the first time things aren't going your way. Sorry, that's the last I'm going to mention it, I promise.
If Dallas had pulled out that game last night, easily with the 3-1 lead, I would have said Dallas was going to win it. But since they lost it, even though it's only 2-2, like I think that was enough for the Spurs to kind of overcome. I'm going to say Spurs in seven.
Fair enough.
If nothing else, it's definitely the only series where one game is going to be decided by a game-winning shot within the last second and a half, and the other is going to be decided by a kick in the face.
There you go. There you have it. So Memphis-OKC, this has been kind of surprising too, because I feel like with the dominance of Durant during the regular season, it just seemed like this was going to be not much of a roadblock for them, and yet here they are tied with Memphis. So
yeah, he was hungry like the wolf.
He was hungry like the wolf.
Sorry,
Durant.
You could have made up. Okay, but that's Durant. This is Durant. You could have made a joke about the bad guy from Darkman. That's fine. No big deal. I don't even care. I'm not here to write your jokes for you. That would be a complete imposition on my part.
That was good.
JC says it's good. I will go by majority vote. So That's a good one, Elliot. But anyway, this basketball game we were talking about. So I don't know. This is another one where I feel like what seemed like a sure thing at the beginning is now kind of up in the air.
Yep.
I probably should have prompted. Probably should have just said, "Hey, physics."
Like, we're letting you get first crack at everything.
It was like George Clooney showed up, and then the girl from Pitch Perfect, and it's like, "Oh, it's up in the air. It's all good."
You just made an up in the air reference.
Well, that's Clooney got incredible. Married recently, so I've been thinking about Clooney lately.
So, physics, how do you see this? I mean, tell me your thoughts on this series specifically.
Before we get there, we have some breaking news. The Washington Wizards have stamped themselves into the semifinals.
Oh, my goodness. As we're recording, goodbye, Chicago Bulls. That's probably not disappointing to a city that has to watch Derrick Rose. I'm back. I'm gone. I'm back. I'm gone. It's like the Ross Perot of All-Stars.
I'm in. I'm out.
So, okay. Well, that's good to know. Thank you for keeping us updated as we probably should keep ourselves updated being a sports show, but that's fine.
But the Clippers score, I'm going to go home and DVR, so.
Okay, so don't give him the Clippers score, which right now I believe that the score is Golden State 10, tolerance 1,000. So I believe that's the score in L.A. But anyway, so Memphis and OKC, give us your thoughts on that series.
It was one series I thought could go six games, but I was leaning towards OKC. But, I mean, it's not hard to imagine that it's tied right now, and it could go seven when you both have your power forward and center being Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, and them being guarded by Serge Ibaka and Kendrick Perkins, and they really can't guard them. They're basically unstoppable once, you know, Zach Randolph is a wrecking ball, Miley Cyrus show. Insert.
Damn it, I'm just like, I'll wait for physics to stop talking, and I'll make the Miley Cyrus joke.
You fool.
I had to stop you right
there. You just can't stop and you won't stop.
No. You should stop immediately. But anyway, you were saying about Miley Cyrus playing for the Grizzlies.
The other teams.
Yeah,
so Billy Ray's coaching. He's telling them to go on the inside, and basically they can't stop him because he's just a huge body that has no athletic ability, but him being a huge body, there's nothing they could do. And then Marc Gasol is basically getting anywhere on the court, and Serge Ibaka's athleticism is not allowing him to be able to guard him. And so they're stuck there. They're actually being able to shoot threes at the moment. And it's really their defense is also stifling the Thunder. So it's really weird. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it ended up, you know, the Grizzlies, you know, going on. It would be really sad as far as the Thunder goes because I think Scott Brooks' job would be up in the air if that happens.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's one of those things. That, I mean, like, as good as they are all season, it's, you know, in a performance like this, when there's so much potential there and if you don't make it through, I mean, I can kind of see from that point of view the things people were saying about the Pacers coach about, you know, is his job going to be in jeopardy if they get beat by the Hawks? And it's like, I can kind of see that now. After the first game when people were saying that, no, that's just absolute panic attack. Like, that's not real logic. But if they actually get beat by a number 8 seed as the number 1 in the playoffs, and it's because of personnel mismanagement or morale or whatever you want to call it, I can kind of see it going that way. So I think you're right about this situation as well. Which, of course, brings us to the hot-button issue, which is, of course, Golden State versus the L.A. Clippers. I think now that the Clippers are allowed to wear their shirts right side out, that they might actually play a little bit better. Do you think that this has been a distraction for them, or do you think it's something that people are just attributing as an excuse for their poor play as of late?
No, it was a huge distraction. Their last game was, you could tell it was on their mind. They weren't playing the same way they usually play. Like, they usually play with, like, a fun to them. Like, they actually enjoyed being out on the court, and it looked like that night it was a job. And they got spanked for it being a job. And they're, as far as teams goes, they're really better than Golden State Warriors. Golden State Warriors, their defense has gone up. They were one of the top defensive teams, surprisingly. But it's also easy to stop them because everything is on Steph Curry's shoulders.
Right.
So, you know, he has to do his heroics at the last 5 minutes of almost every game I've watched this year when it came to Steph Curry. And that can only get you so far. So, like, they should really be like the, game two when they beat them 138-98.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't a fluke. That was just them being own at 100% and having Blake Griffin coming up the court showing his point guard skills that he had when he was in high school player and all of that. But right now, I really feel like the weight of, you know, fat-ass Donald Sterling has been lifted off of them, and they should – I think they're going to ball out of control tonight, and it's going to be – might be a blowout as far as how this game goes.
Yeah, it's one of the things that kind of just bums me out about the situation, because watching all four of these games and every time they met up during the regular season, like I – if there was a way the NBA could make this the NBA Finals and have it be like a 14-game series, like I would be down with that, because the first three games, it's just so fun to watch both of these teams play. And yeah, this situation sucks, man.
It definitely does. And then rounding out the West is Portland and Houston. I think this is probably the least surprising for me. As impressed as I have been with Harden and Dwight Howard playing together, I'm not surprised that Portland has a 3-1 lead over them. They were the standouts in the West for a very long time. And then, of course, everybody else started to catch up. They didn't finish as well, whatever.
They blazed a trail.
They did blaze a trail. And that trail leads me to believe that they will probably go ahead and finish this last game out and move on to the semifinals. I mean, am I wrong here?
No, I don't think that you are. To bring back one of my other Wesley-isms, you could put a cat in the oven, but it doesn't make it a biscuit. And I'll put that towards Houston being a championship team. And, you know, they were supposed to, you know, the way that they built him was to be a championship team. But I think they forgot that James Harden is horrible at defense. Yeah. I don't know what you call what he does defense, or basically just looking at the person on the court.
James Harden, more like hardly working.
And just running around. And he's screwing them because he can't guard Damian Lillard. He can't guard Wesley Matthews. He's just stuck out there. He can only score, so he's basically useless and has to hope that, you know, Patrick Beverly or, you know, Chandler Parsons or Dwight Howard behind him bails him out, and they can't do it all the game. So right now, that's what's screwing them, and it looks like they'll be out the first round.
Yeah, James Harden he's got one of two basic defensive moves. He's going to let you, the offensive player, go to your left, and as you pass me, I'm going to reach around and try to slap the ball from behind you, which never works. Nope. I've never seen him be successful.
But he's persistent with that approach.
Or he's going to play the Ole defense and just say, "Get him, Dwight."
Get him, ball. Yeah,
which,
you show him.
Which in the
Get
last him, game, Dwight did have a couple of amazing blocks, and everybody was talking about the blocks. And like, but did you just not see James Harden open the floodgates?
Like having a seizure on the court.
Yeah.
Also, I want to talk about Jeremy Lin for a second, because I don't know if you guys saw this video the other night of his roughly 7-step drive from just outside the 3-point line to the hoop. Yeah, no, he posted that. I watched it and I was like, he's a running back at that point. He's not a basketball. He's not even trying to dribble. He doesn't dribble once from the 3-point line all the way to the hoop for a layup, and no traveling is called whatsoever. Definitive proof that traveling is not called in the NBA.
And I loved last night in the final play when the ball was kind of bobbling around. I wish I remembered who said it on Twitter, because it just made me laugh so hard. But it was just in all caps: "Nobody likes you, Jeremy Lin."
Go back to Harvard with the smart kids.
Like I said, LeBron James crab dribble just shook his head looking at them like, wow. You're embarrassing the crab dribble right now with that.
But you know what? He got away with it.
Maybe Jeremy Lin thought he was on the interstate in Houston and was like, I got to get over three lanes.
It could be. Or he might have thought he was playing for the Lakers and, again, was just like, well, I got away with it. So that's kind of a breakdown of each series individually. So before we close out this segment, Physics, I want to know who right now, based on what you've seen, are your strongest contenders from the East and from the West? Who do you think is going to the finals?
Oh, man. Right now from the East is Miami. It's clearly Miami. From the West, it sucks because both of these series are 2-2. So if the Spurs come out, Spurs. But if the Clippers come out, it's between them. And I'm really hoping that it might be Miami Clippers. I think that would be a really exciting finals. Yeah. And I would love to see it.
I would love that. I even tweeted out a week ago. I was like, before all the Sterling stuff happened, like if it ended up being Miami Clippers and like the Clippers won, I wouldn't even be mad, because I like watching that team so much. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, is I've been saying for a long time they need a second All-Star game. So sure, why not make it the NBA Finals? That would be perfect. Physics, man, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about the basket hoops. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. And hopefully I'm back again. We could do some more Wesleyisms. I didn't use a Blade one, so I got tons of those. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And tell us where people can find you online, because I've been – I got to tell you, man – Black Women has been one of my go-to jams recently. That is a great track.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Where you want to find me online, one of the easiest ways to go on Google and put in PHZ- and I will be the first thing that pops up. You can buy my album off iTunes called The Moment. It's my first album on iTunes, so, you know, appreciate the support. The video's coming down to Black Women on my YouTube page, youtube.com/PHZSICKS. Coming Down video was on MTV not too long ago, so a lot of great things are happening. So, you know, I'm looking forward to doing a tour maybe soon, and also getting back to Austin.
I was going
to
say, make sure that tour comes through Austin, man.
But, you know, hopefully I get there soon, get back there sooner.
Heck yeah, man. We'll put a link up on the page here for your stuff. We really do appreciate it, and keep doing what you're doing, man, because I got to tell you, you can already boast, you can already take pride in the fact that you have a far better rap song than the one that's at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2. Jesus Christ.
Well, that artist can take umbrage.
That artist can take all the umbrage they want.
Not only Dolores umbrage, but real umbrage.
Wow. Wow. So many geeky things coming out of your mouth at once, Elliot. I love it. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for this segment. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back to take some of your questions from the Twitter sphere. How the hell do you not love black women? I'm talking black women. The queens of Mother Earth. How the hell do you not love black women? I'm talking black women. I'm talking black women. Sun rays baked in the skin, close our arms around them. I'm talking about black women. How the hell do you not love black women? I'm talking black women. And now it's time for a segment that I've unofficially titled Cheers from the Cheap Seats. We're going to start with a question from Colin Pritchett, who asks, or at Black Dynamut on Twitter.
Okay.
He says, despite my feelings for ESPN, the 30 for 30 series is great. What have been some of your favorites? So I just want to go around. JC, how about you?
Huge Allen Iverson fan. The trial of Allen Iverson, it paints him in a different light, and it exposes a lot of things that people didn't know about him, didn't know about his journey to the NBA. It's a really fascinating story. It also has a lot of highlights of him playing football in high school, and he was a really highly regarded quarterback that came out of Virginia at the same time that Michael Vick did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what about you? Yeah. What about you, Elliot?
I tell you, like, I haven't seen as many of the 30 for 30s as I would like to, so I'm going to actually throw a curveball back at him and say my favorite show on ESPN that got canceled because I think it was a little too realistic was a show came on in the mid-2000s called Playmakers.
Yeah.
And it was really insightful, it was really good, but it was a little too good. I feel like the NFL leaned on ESPN and said, hey, cut that shit out.
Yeah. Lasted, what, about two seasons?
Yeah, like only that? Two seasons.
Yeah. No, that was a good show. I remember that. Yeah.
What about you, Adam?
I've only seen a handful of them, and I think I'm pretty selective with it, with the ones that I watch. Usually it's not so much the stories that really track me to them, it's more the subjects. Mm-hmm. So I think of the ones that I watched, the one that was most insightful was probably Run, Ricky, Run.
Oh, yeah.
Because it definitely paints a different light on the... If you're not from Texas, you don't, I guess, fully understand... I don't think you fully grasp the kind of character that Ricky Williams was, and especially the kind of celebrity he was here in Texas. But you see that... I think you can see sort of why he seemed to make the decisions that he was making. It didn't seem like he was just trying to be a pothead.
Right.
So I really dig that one, but the one that was the most entertaining for me, and it was mainly because I don't think I ever really fully grasped the Superman aspect of what Bo Jackson was, but Bo knows. Like,
yeah.
The Bo Jackson 30 for 30, it really sheds a light on just what kind of a superhuman athlete Bo Jackson was.
Sure.
You know? So that was the most entertaining for me.
For me, I really liked Big Shot, which was the one about the Islanders owner who kind of bluffed his way into being the Islanders owner, that was put together by Kevin from Entourage. Kevin Connolly. Great, great job with that one. But my heart always belongs to 4 Days in October, which is a documentary that makes me cry every single time and isn't about the Holocaust. I think it's the only documentary I can say that about. And it's just about the Boston Red Sox finally overcoming the curse. And actually, it's not even about the World Series. It's about the ALCS when they had to come back from a three-game deficit, win four in a row, and just sort of the miraculous way in which they did that and what that did to the community. And, yep, every single time I watch it, just tears in my eyes.
You know, the one that I'm regretful that I didn't actually watch was the Steve Nash documentary. Steve Nash directed a documentary, I think, about a marathon runner in Canada.
Yeah.
Really?
Something like that, right? Yeah. That was one that I didn't get to see, but the fact that Steve Nash decided to get behind the camera to direct a documentary seemed really intriguing to me.
Yeah, that is intriguing.
Hey, he was in a Timbaland video.
That's also a thing. Yeah. Into the Wind is the documentary that you're talking about.
And Promiscuous Girl is a Timbaland video. So, 2006.
I'm sure he's very grateful for that, too. He puts that way up on his resume.
It was
right behind directing a documentary.
One of the lyrics was, is your game MVP like Steve Nash? Because that was the year he was MVP.
Yeah, I always love that about rap when they make rap. There was some article I read not too long ago that was like the most irrelevant athletes mentioned in rap songs throughout the years. It was a fucking brilliant article because, yep, every lyric they dropped, I was like, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah.
Anyway, our next question comes to us from another name on Twitter that I will bring up and read. Kevin Moreno, who asked, I think, two questions last time. So, Kevin, thank you very much for keeping this segment going. If you guys were in a WWE tag team match for the tag team title, who would be your tag team partner and which tag team would win? You said tag team a lot. let me boil this down a little bit. Okay. So let's say we're going to put together a tag team in which we will be competing for the tag team title of the WWE. Who would we partner with? I'm just gonna stop it right there because which team would win? I mean, why would you pick the best partner and then say the other team would win? So I'm just going to say if you were going to go for the WWE title, it could be a movie character, it could be an athlete, whatever. Who would you want in your corner?
So if it could be anybody, sorry, I just kind of got excited about it. If it could be anybody, not just like a wrestler, Spider-Man is my favorite superhero, so I would pick Spider-Man.
Who has wrestling experience?
He does have, yeah, he took down
Randy. Bonesaw's ready.
He took down Randy Savage, but then again, so did a heart condition. So, what? Oh, come on. It's too soon for that? Fine. He didn't die. He's still alive. You happy now? Okay. No.
I got my answer, and it's the same answer I got during the summer when somebody posted on Facebook, you know, well, the Pacific Rim website posted on Facebook. Yes, I mentioned Pacific Rim at LSU One Show. they posted, who would be your Drift co-pilot? And I just, without thinking, I said, oh, my dad. So for me, like, if I had the tag team, I would take my dad at his prime and be like, yep, that's what I want in the ring with me, because that man...
Could he beat Spider-Man?
I doubt he could beat Spider-Man.
Are we really having that playground conversation?
My dad would shoot Spider-Man in the face. He'd be like, oh, you can put him on his shit.
I'm going to take my dad. Your dad can't beat Spider-Man.
My dad can beat up your dad, right, but not Spider-Man.
Not Spider-Man.
Okay, Adam?
This seems way too broad.
Well, deal with it. It's a question we got. I mean,
so like Peter. So.
I've already narrowed it down a little bit, so fucking deal with what we got.
This is not narrowed down at all. Take anybody. Take anybody at all.
Harry
anybody
Knowles.
You want. Just your imagination can run wild.
Yeah. I'm sorry I made you think, Adam. I don't know what you want from me.
I take the Blob.
Okay, the Blob. The actual gelatinous Blob, not the X-Men character.
And, yeah, and Spider-Man would have trouble with the Blob. Yeah.
There you have it. Oh.
Whatever.
Adam has given up.
Adam really hates hypotheticals.
Fuck your hypotheticals.
That's what I'm learning right now. This is crazy to me.
I didn't know that about him.
This is...
I love hypotheticals.
Shit, I can't even take the Blob because I can't tag him in or I'm going to die.
That's true.
So much in the same way that Derek Rose's weakness is his knee, Adam's weakness is hypothetical questions. And this is something I'm just learning tonight. So that's certainly a thing.
This is fascinating.
I'm going to go ahead and give an answer without being angry about it. Jesus Christ. William Wallace. I'm going with William Wallace in my corner. Because not only is he strong, not only has he led rebellions, not only is he both an actual historical character and a movie character, but that face paint would look really awesome. I mean, you kind of get like an Ultimate Warrior thing going on.
Okay, is the goal to win or just the goal
goal is to get out there and loot. Yes, it's to win.
And you take William Wallace to take you against Spider-Man?
Well, I don't think I'm facing Spider-Man. I'm probably facing the Bushwhackers or whichever guy is left from Legion of Doom and someone else. I don't know. The point is... Adam is terrible at hypotheticals.
No, he's not terrible. He objects to them.
He just objects to them as a concept. Maybe we shouldn't do this anymore. But fuck it, we're doing another one.
Broken Adam.
We're doing another one. Hey, this one's also about wrestling. At Manuel Perez. At Manuel Perez PR says, if you were a wrestler, what would your name be, or what name would you have? Is that...
That's at least more specific.
Is that specific enough, or do I need, like, the name of your wrestler? Not necessarily that you have to legally change your name like the Ultimate Warrior did.
Sure.
But your actual wrestling name. Adam, I'm going to start with you because I want to see the volcano erupt again.
Man, okay, pick a wrestling name.
That's what I just asked you to do.
Yeah, I know.
Why are you asking me to do it for you?
I got one.
I'm going to watch him simmer.
Well, I'm going to give him some more time. Like all wrestling names, it'd have to be basically, I would be a character of myself, so I would be Black Council.
Black Council?
Yeah.
I think I played that card in the Game of Thrones game the other day.
Yeah, it's like I would just play as like...
I think it's an event card. It cancels out military strength. Anyway, you were saying...
I would basically play a wrestling version of Johnny Cochran. And I would be the heel. They would just all hate me.
You wouldn't be a wrestler. You'd be the guy who brings the wrestler to the
ring. Well, then I'd be the manager. That'd be great. Yeah.
That works out really well. JC, I'm going to let you go now because I feel like if we go back to Adam, he's going to break the microphone.
He's going to break the table.
I had a name. I was trying to get something outside of the box of something I've called myself before. So, but I couldn't think of anything better.
Okay.
But anyway, the name that I always called that I would consider myself, like from high school, because I'm relatively short, but I was somewhat stocky. I always called myself Beef Nuggets. So
there you go.
That would be my wrestling name.
That's a good name.
Beef Nuggets.
And in this corner, it's better than mine, which is
Beef Nuggets.
So I was trying to think of any nickname I had when I played football in high school, and.
Sorry, Jesse.
Beef Nuggets. You're not a wrestler. You're a thing I feed my dog. Beef Nuggets. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
So the only time I had a nickname in high school,
can you just imagine
football,
my monologues?
Yes, I could.
Sorry, Jesse.
Was my freshman year. I had a coach who won game, and this story happened. And then for the rest of my high school career, even though he was only a freshman coach, he would always call me this nickname. He would call me 52. And the reason why he would call me 52...
Because he predicted DC's reboot of their entire comics canon.
So there was one game in which I was having a particularly bad game, and I was an offensive tackle. And this linebacker on the opposing team, who had number 52, was just kicking my ass up and down all day. And so at halftime, he, in front of the whole team, took it upon himself to, like, grab a permanent marker and mark on my hand 52. I don't care what the play is called or what your blocking assignment is. I don't care what it is. Every play, just go after 52. To which my response was, well, what about, and I named like three different plays in which I'm supposed to like pull or just like basically go anywhere but that linebacker was saying. And he just yelled at me, 52! That's all he said.
Did it work?
Yeah, I played a
pretty good game. Infiltrate the dealers, find the suppliers.
Infiltrate the dealers, find the suppliers.
And he's the only one who ever did it. But yeah, all through high school, and he wouldn't call me by my name. He would just call me 52. And so that would be my wrestling name.
I like it.
I have a similar story.
Really? Beef Nuggets has a similar story?
Yeah. So I played for a really shitty high school football team, but...
he was ground beef then.
So we were getting our asses handed to us by this school in Pflugerville. I think it was, I don't know, going into like the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, we were down like 40-7, something like that. But they had a blue chip prospect on their defensive line who went on to go play for, I think, Texas A&M. And he was just in the backfield the entire night. And we had a guy on our team. He was a fullback. Really kind of tough guy. But he had like Mike Tyson syndrome. Like, he just sounded like a female when he talked, despite being able to play.
I think that's very, very rude, you know?
So all I can remember from the game is getting back into the huddle. And 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and this guy with a very feminine voice just, man, 77 is killing us! You ain't bad, you ain't nothing!
Wow. All right. Yeah.
Needless to say, we didn't win after that.
So. But that's where Beef Nuggets came
from.
That's
where Beef Nuggets came from.
I'm so happy to... You know what? I'm going to get a... This is going to be a thing that we just say on the show now, you realize.
It's like, so I'm the little nuggets. Side, he's okay.
No,
Beef Nuggets.
No. Not even just in reference to Adam. It's just something I'm going to shout randomly during
Beef
the show.
Nuggets!
Beef Nuggets! And we will get a t-shirt made, and it will be fucking amazing.
Okay, what about you, cool. Snake Plissken?
Actually, I... my brother and I used to have illusions that one day we were going to be professional wrestlers. This was back in the brief period when I was, you know, when I was a little kid, I liked wrestling, but I liked the wrestlers more than I actually liked watching wrestling. I liked the characters. And when I got a little bit older, there was a brief window when I was super into wrestling. Like, I had a Brahma Bull, like, football jersey that I bought. It was super expensive. I saved up for a long time. But anyway, we had a tag team that we were – I was Shockwave, and he was Kid Chaos.
Nice.
And we were – like, what we would do is we would film. We wouldn't actually, like, do that stupid thing that kids in the Midwest did where you try to, like – do wrestling moves and you break your brother's neck. We would just record promos. So we would like do like, and then there was for a while, I imagined that this is when it started getting weird is like, I imagined that my character, my wrestler would have had a falling out with the WWE and go to WCW. Cause this is when they were two separate entities and he was going to change his name to Psycho and be Psycho in the WCW and then come back to the WWE as Shockwave. It was going to be this big, like, again, I think this is where my obsession with, like, overarching story stuff comes from. So, I guess Shockwave is the short answer to that very, well, very long
was response. Your finish – because, I mean, the only reason that wouldn't have worked is your finishing move would have been the Shocker.
No, I don't think –
that had just been a
I think
bit
I
weird.
Called it, like the power line or something. I can't remember what I called it.
You mean the musical star from a Goofy movie?
I got whatever it takes.
Yes!
It's a piece of cake.
This is why I love this man. He gets a power line reference right here.
I do. I thankfully do. And thankfully,
I love a Goofy movie.
Thankfully for you, dear listener, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you for tweeting questions.
I like the question asking us how we're preparing for the World Cup, and the answer is we're going to let Blake do it.
We're going to bring in Ashley. Yeah, we're going to bring in some guests to do a lot of our World Cup coverage, because frankly, you don't want to hear us talk about it.
Well, honestly, you know what? I've been Ramon, who's been on the show a couple times before. We worked together, and one of the things that he's been doing over the course of the past couple weeks during the Champions League, I think, is what's going on. We watched Champions League together during our lunch break. So I've been getting a little bit of education on soccer, like a tiny bit.
Great. Then you can lead the entirely new cast of people
we can grill
that comes in during the World Cup.
There you go.
And we can grill beef nuggets.
Okay.
Grill beef nuggets.
It's
pretty good.
Beef nuggets. Yep, that's going to be a thing that happens.
And Kevin Marino, even though Adam hates hypotheticals,
it was a good question.
That was a lot of fun.
You just that question.
Sometimes you can't apply too much heat to
honestly,
the.
Honestly, you know what? No.
Nuggets.
Be nice to the listeners.
It was actually a great question. I don't know why. I get flustered when giving way too many options. Like,
yeah, I hate it when I have too. You're such an American. I have too many options. That's really my biggest problem. So,
like,
it even happens in restaurants too. Like, any restaurant with a menu that's over three pages, I just can't deal with it.
So have you ever been in a cheesecake factory?
That's why I love In-N-Out because it's three options. It's like burger with cheese. Burger with cheese and lettuce.
Have you ever been forcefully removed from a cheesecake factory for screaming at the waitress?
I don't go to the cheesecake factory.
There you go. All right, there you have it. Anyway, that's the end of the show. You can find us on Twitter at ITLcast. You can also follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at BryGuySalisbury. Beef nuggets.
We were like giving death, so we were a little distracted.
No, it's not. What is it?
It's at @_beef, although I think I should change my Twitter name now.
Yes!
Yes, moving on, sorry.
ITL Elliot.
@JCDeLeon1.
We're good at this. We're good at this around the table stuff. We're awesome.
Well, you usually start with me.
I know. Well, I'm doing stuff differently because of Beef Nuggets! Anyway.
Do you have parentheses in your Twitter name?
Do I?
Can you?
Like, yeah, I'm sure you can.
Okay. Like, let's go a little nicely with
Adam you. Beef Nuggets Charles?
Well, no, @_beef_nuggets.
Yeah, we can talk about LeBorn.
I love that your Twitter handle is going to look like a math problem. Like some calculus bullshit.
_beef multiplied by the amount of nuggets.
Yes.
Either that or some like really nouveau French restaurant menu or
delicious.
Something.
Delicious. You can also find the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. And please do become a subscriber and use those Amazon links. Whenever you see them, it's a great way to help support the site by doing something you were going to do anyway. Anytime you want to buy something from Amazon, click on the easiest way to do it is just our pick of the week link right there on the main page in the sidebar. Click on that, get to Amazon, buy whatever you need to. Just by getting there through the link, you have benefited the site, and we appreciate it. And we will be back next week with more of this. So if this is your first time listening, you know, gauge accordingly. Until then, I'm going to close out the show by saying what I always do, which is that sports are not just for jocks anymore.
Beef nuggets.
Beef nuggets.